Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson, and I have Afia Atamensa on the line with me. She's the Executive Director of Community Voices Heard, doing a lot of great things in our community. Afia, can you please say hello and just let us know a little bit more about what you're currently doing?
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on. Community Voices Heard, we are in our 24th year of operation, and we were founded by 8 women of color who are on public assistance welfare. Mm-hmm. And had minor children at the time. And, you know, at that time, in both in America and particularly in the state of New York, there was a lot of racist, misogynist backlash against low-income women of color. Mm-hmm. And these women came together and had this radical idea that they had the best ideas and the best policy prescriptions to make the lives of themselves and their children and their communities better. So they founded CVH as an organization that would be truly accountable to them, push unapologetically for power, so that they could create policy initiatives that wouldn't punish people for being poor, but would instead actually try and work to pull people out of poverty. And we've evolved from that single issue in 1994 to growing to be a large statewide organization in New York City. We have chapters in Westchester County, Orange County, Dutchess County, and Rockland County. And we work on issues like truly affordable housing, a just social safety net, immigration reform, criminal justice reform, and open democracy, with the idea that we want to build racial, social, and economic justice for all New Yorkers and really make this state powerful for all its members. So I'm blessed to be at the head of an organization that has that as their mantra and that has a really, I think, special history of centering women of color who are fighting for themselves. It's been an amazing experience. We're working on a multitude of campaigns across the state.
One of the main issues that I'm always concerned about is housing, especially with the population of single mothers and that single household, whether male or female, paying the rent, food, and you have all these condos being built. You have projects being converted into condos or co-ops. What's that challenge like? Because I know you've addressed that. How do you address that? How do you really get the attention that if we don't make a change, people are just going to be homeless? So then there's another crisis.
Great question. I think one of the number one issues that our members face in all of their chapters are issues of housing, affordability, and stability for the community. So we have a multi-pronged apparatus to deal with this. So in the city, we have a strong campaign in regards to funding for public housing.
Okay.
No secret that the New York City Housing Authority is in a dire situation because of lack of funds, that there are some, frankly, folks are living in some atrocious conditions.
Right.
We've had a really ambitious and, I would say, radical campaign to demand that the City of New York give $1 billion to public housing for capital improvement. And due to some of our leveraging, you see that the state finally made an investment of $550 million. And the city council has echoed a call for $1 billion in the city budget. Now, while the New York City budget doesn't close until July, it's really been a big step. The city council is echoing our call and deciding to say, yes, this is the time for a real investment in public housing. And that change has only come because our members did things like force things other than tours with the media, right? They would have elected officials come. So would have a serious accountability session thereafter to say, you've seen the conditions in which we're living. What are you going to do to help change that? And they had a clear analysis that one of the most important things was to leverage funds so that the Housing Authority would have no excuse as reasons why these repairs weren't being made. So it came from a lot of hard groundwork from thousands of members and allies who said, yes, this is a key issue for them, and have been unapologetic and relentless in calling elected officials every event that the mayor of New York has, making sure that NYCHA is a question that must be asked about, really changing the narrative, to be honest, about what public housing could and should look like in New York. And then I would say in Westchester County, which for years, if we're honest, decades under the previous county executive, has really been trying not to have any affordable housing in the county. You know, CEH continued to push on the county executive level. Our sister organization, a C4 political organization, CEH Power, worked hard to stump for a new county executive who shared our vision and values, and we're excited when he won that election. George Latimer made clear that he is more than open to ensuring that there's affordable housing throughout Westchester County.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an organization, because, again, of the membership and the dogged work of the membership, have been able to get funding allocated in Westchester for people's housing needs assessment. It would allow individuals to really step forward and talk a little bit about what their housing concerns are throughout Westchester, so that the county would be forced to take a deeper look and do an analysis about what type of housing is really needed throughout the county. See that as a first step. So first you have to be clear about what the needs are, and then first step in making sure that that type of housing is built.
How do people join or become affiliated with your organization? Because you guys are doing great work.
Thanks for asking. So there's two ways. Our headquarters in New York City is at 115 East 106th Street. So folks can always come on in. And we're online at the CDHAction, ACTION.org. And folks can kind of go online or, you know, send an email. Right. And generally, the majority of our members come after kind of seeing a victory we had, that's a group I want to be affiliated with. And they'll come to our chapter meetings or, you know, kind of ask and organize our questions. So folks kind of go online and see where our offices are or sign call. We can make sure that they're made aware of when the next chapter meeting closest to them is happening so that we can get them involved.
Excellent. And I'm glad, you know, people who really do want to partake in making a change and an effort can have this outlet, because sometimes we want to do stuff and we just don't know how to connect. So it's good that Community Voices Heard is out there on the front lines doing a great work. Now, I do have a question. You were talking about the narrative of New York City housing. How do we change the narrative that the projects are just for poor people? Because that's really not true. Sometimes you have a lot of city workers that actually live in the projects or have lived there. And it's not so much for poor people anymore. To me, I feel like as far as wages and the whole economy crumbling, hey, if I need to live there, I just need to live there. Am I correct or am I wrong? You can tell me better.
You are 100% correct. In fact, not only do some city workers live there, pursuant to DC 37, which is the local of AFSCME, the municipal workers in the city, I mean, they estimate almost 15,000 of their workers live in public housing.
Wow.
Public housing is housing for working class families in New York City. If you're like the majority of us and you can't afford a $3,000 apartment, you know, it's good to have an option where, you know, the housing costs are based on your income.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we say NYCHA is important, because it's the last bastion of truly affordable housing in the city of New York,
mm-hmm.
right? And so a lot of working people, working class folks who have these crazy ideas that they should have more than a studio apartment, pay less than $3,000 a month, live in public housing, right?
Because where
else can you, you know, raise a family, frankly, if it's not like either Mitchell Lama housing or NYCHA, or unless you've been in like your apartment for generations, that's something that's stable and affordable. So you are 100% correct that there has been this misinformation campaign about public housing.
Right.
And to answer your larger question of how do we change this narrative, it's going to take some time, because we're honest and frank that a lot of this narrative has been racist in nature.
Yes.
That right there, it's this trope that like it's those people living in public housing, they just want to folks don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all of us who live in public housing, right?
Right.
And public housing was originally created as a mechanism to relieve the slums, right? The tenement buildings where folks that were a lot worse conditions. And if you take time to really talk to people, you'll hear folks talking about stories with pride about being the first family to move into a Drew Hamilton, right? Or other places and what it was. And public housing, particularly in New York City, but also across the nation, has been allowed to decline because since the Reagan administration about 40 years ago, there has been a intentional systemic disinvestment in public housing. And when you disinvest, just like in any other house, if you never fix the roof, if there's not money to repair things, you know, it's not like wine. It doesn't grow better. Right? Things deteriorate, they age, and they fall into disrepair. And I think it's not coincidence that buildings, developments that are predominantly Black and Latinx have been allowed to disrepair.
Right. Another question I have is, you know, I just hear these things that when people are incarcerated, they can't return back if they lived in the projects to their housing. Is that true?
Yes. There's been some effort by some amazing community organizations to change that in regards to reentry. But for a lot of folks, there is a huge barrier to returning home. If home is a federally subsidized unit, like a public housing development, to folks that spend their time.
Yeah, how did that happen? What caused that? If I go to jail, now I can't even come back home to my house. I don't know how that even became a subject, if you can help me.
sure. It was a law that was passed at a federal level, and it's had a chilling effect during a time, I think the earlier days of mass incarceration, that's part of what happened, that, folks returning home were ineligible because of criminal activity. And in the New York Housing Authority, there's different layers and tiers. It depends on what type of offense, felony or misdemeanor, and the level they're in, which dictates how long you're ineligible for public housing.
Okay.
So it's definitely a hurdle that we know is not helpful, particularly from a policy standpoint. When folks are returning home from being previously incarcerated, if they're not able to return home to a family, I would say it's not like they have a summer home in the Poconos. Most likely people go and see the shelter system.
Right, right.
And there was a great article about this, about folks being, leaving incarceration and then coming home and coming back to the city, rather, and are in the shelter system. And we know that our homeless population in New York should be a statewide embarrassment, but has been growing. And some of that is definitely due to folks who are returning and don't have a place to live because they cannot go back to the public housing environment.
Right. And I have another question. How much responsibility contributes to the better situation of public housing? Okay, we understand that there's budgets. Just like I own a home, I have pride of home ownership. And even before that, I did live in a tenement building, 6 floors. If there was stuff in front of the building, we cleaned it ourselves. So how much responsibility does the people who live there should take as well in maintaining the overall building?
Great point. So what I would say to that is, just as anywhere else, there are good and bad folks. There are attentive folks and folks who are less attentive. And I would say, by and large, folks who live in public housing, most folks just want to be able to go to work or go to what they're going and come home and take care of themselves and their families. But just as in every building and as in every family, there are folks who I say, have wandered from grace.
Right.
And, that can affect the whole building.
Right.
I think kind of amplify what's already a tough situation. But I think what's most important is, just like with everything else, it's the exception. Those folks are the exception, not the rule, right?
Right.
And so whole development shouldn't be held hostage because maybe they have a few folks who have shied away from grace. And having residents who are not the best, neighbors who are not the best, doesn't relieve the city of New York, the state of New York, and the federal government of their obligations to make investments.
Right. You said something key. You said that even though we have some bad apples in the building, it doesn't release the NYCHA to perform their duties as repairs or what have you. But also, I wanted to know, if you do have someone that's really, and we know this person is, just partaking in destroying the fabric of where we live, just like if you don't pay your rent, you get evicted, where's the thin line between you're not just going to keep living here, destroying the property, and we just accept that? So there's no rules like, okay, you got to go. But if I go to jail, I can't come back home. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand. I should say that the Housing Authority has a pretty robust law department, right? Like, they're taking people to housing court every day in the city of New York.
Oh, okay.
Eviction proceedings, be it non-payment of rent or other issues in regard to them not living up to their obligations of tenancy. So I will just raise up that there is no shortage of eviction and termination proceedings happening through that NYCHA.
Okay.
They have a robust department, and that is literally what they do.
Okay. I just wanted to know, I just wanted to know. Because I was concerned, like, okay, the elevator's never working and the door's never locked, but I can't come back home, if I went to jail.
Right.
Like, I need a balance. Well, thanks for sharing that with me. There's another subject matter that I wanted to address, being a female, and that was marital rape. I read that and I said to myself, I never even hear about that a spouse can rape another spouse. I don't even know any information. We hear domestic violence, we hear all kinds of other stuff, but can you just address that a little bit for me?
Sure. I mean, the idea of folks having the autonomy to make declarations for themselves and what they want to engage in and participate in transcends your marital status, right? Because it comes from the very real, we would say, right position that no one is another person's property.
Right.
So it doesn't matter if you're single and it's a stranger, or single and it's a friend, or married and it's your partner. no means no.
Right.
And someone proceeding forward against anyone else's will, since individuals are not property, can and should carry ramifications. And I think it's, within the movement for gender equality, it's something that we have to have honest conversations about, and there's got to be a grappling with that women are not property. And intimate partners, being a partner with someone does not carry property rights over that person.
Right. I mean, it's so unspoken of that I was just like, wow. And what can someone do if they're in that situation right now? Someone may be listening and being like, oh, this happens to me. What is it that someone could do?
Sure. Great question. I would say that, you know, if you're in the city of New York, folks can reach out to domestic violence advocates who will definitely work with them and speak with them and provide counseling and information, and they can get that information by calling 311. There's organizations like Safe Horizons who specialize in this that will be of assistance and will be able to talk with folks and apprise them of their rights and equally give support and refer folks to therapy and family therapy as needed.
Yes, and I want to just be clear, that is both for male and female. Sometimes we talk about molestation and it's always focused on female, but I like to let everybody know it's both genders that can be victimized or, in trouble. So that is great. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we go? Because this is good, and I can go on and on, but I know you're busy.
No, this has been great, and I thank you so much for having me and allowing me to take part in just this amazing conversation, and I would love to be back with you at a time of your choosing, but
okay.
This has been great.
All right. Well, let us know about the website again. I'm going to encourage people to get involved because I hate that there's so much things going on and it's like organizations that are out here that we just don't know about and that we can't connect to really make a difference in our community.
Thank you so much again. And that, the website is C as in cat, V as in Victor, H as in happy, action, ACTION.org, CBHaction.org. We look forward to working with you and building power.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me on your show and for all the amazing work you do. Thank you.
All right.